What's going on, everyone? Welcome into the the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Football Podcast presented by Reality Sports Online. My name is Kyle Yates, and I am your host, and I'm joined, as always, by Ray Garvin, who you can find on Twitter at RayGQ. Ray, I had to do that, man. I planned that one out, obviously. Did not just come up with that off the top of my head, man. I was pretty excited to at least get that one. I'd been thinking about it all day. Trey Lance, man, we're talking the NFL draft here. I am pumped up. It's been a few days, so we have not talked at all since the NFL draft. So, man, this is just going to be a ton of fun to kind of just sit down, get our reactions. But first off, before we get into that, how are you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing well, man. Just, another week, and it's sort of, you get so excited for Christmas, and then once it's over, the reality that you have to wait another 364 days for that to come back around sets in, and you get kind of sad, man. So I'm glad the draft is over, but, you know, it was a fun process, but I am very, very much glad that it's over, and I've already started work into 2022, so I'm doing well, brother.
Yep, I am in that same boat where I'm like, I'm glad that it's over. I'm glad that we have just the like numerous rumors, smoke screens, just constant bickering on. Maybe the constant bickering probably won't go away, but on Twitter there, but that'll always be there. But no, it's just so good to have that in the rearview mirror. And now I'm in like one of my rookie drafts are going right now. And I was reminded all over again, just how much fun it is trying to trade up, trying to get your guys. It's just so much fun, man. I'm ready.
See, Yates, that's why I like having the rookie drafts before, because I'm sitting back and I'm just like, where's he going to land? Where's he going to land?
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Yes, I got it. Trey Lance in San Francisco. Good for my dynasty team. So,
man, I already have like enough anxiety and like panic and just like unrest throughout the 3 days of the NFL draft, and like with the guys that I've kind of stood on the table for, be adding in that where I have the like just nervous energy about where these players are going to land for my fantasy team, my dynasty roster. I don't know if I could take that. But so how we're going to structure this, that we've got two episodes here where we're going to react to the NFL draft. We're going to look at quarterback and running back landing spots here, and we're going to give kind of our just instant reactions here, kind of our thoughts on the landing spots, and then kind of where we're thinking of where they're going to land in our big boards or where they should go in dynasty rookie drafts if they saw their stock fall, rise based on expectations. So we'll kind of break down all that. So let's just start here at the top at quarterback, at the quarterback position. And let's just go, man, number one overall. Of course, it's Trevor Lawrence here landing in Jacksonville. We talked about this. We knew that this pick was happening. Of course, everyone and their grandmother knew that Trevor Lawrence was going to end up in Jacksonville. So anything here that you want to add now that you know not only that Trevor Lawrence is in Jacksonville, but then that you also know his supporting cast now, right? The players that were added either through the draft now, of course, Travis Etienne, we'll talk about him in a little bit. How does that impact Trevor Lawrence? So anything that you want to talk about here with Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville?
Yeah, I mean, we knew he was going to be the number one pick. We knew that for 2 years, regardless who was picking up there. Comes to fruition, they add players around him. It's a great situation. The only thing I want to add, and it's the most important, is I do wholeheartedly believe there's a conversation for three guys at quarterback one. I think that's where we're at. And if you were to tell me that one of the other two guys are QB1 or you shift the order and you have Trevor Lawrence at quarterback three, I don't think you're crazy whatsoever. So kudos to those who had, you know, some other guys at the number one spot for quite some time. But I just think that because of the landing spots of two other quarterbacks in particular, there's a very real conversation of who should come off the board first.
I absolutely think that there's a conversation. And that's why when we talked about leading up into the NFL draft, we said that if you've got the 101 in a Superflex rookie draft, right? Like, look if you can move down to the 102, the 103. Don't jump down significantly, but at least look down where if someone is just so blinded, right? They've got their blinders on. And it's not like it's not like Trevor Lawrence is not going to be a great fantasy option, right? That's not what this is. But the difference and the value that you can get trading down to the 102, the 103 with these other guys that we knew were going to land in good spots are going to be great for fantasy. the value there that you could get with trading down and still getting one of those top tier guys was worth it in both of our opinions. So yeah, for me, Trevor Lawrence, now that we know, of course, now that he's got Travis Etienne there in the backfield with him, I just think that all of this goes together. It's a really, really solid supporting cast. And I think that he can be fantasy relevant in year one. I don't know in redraft leagues, right? We're not talking redraft, but in redraft leagues, I think that he can be that borderline, like you can start him in some matchups. I don't know if he's going to carry your team, your Superflex team in year one, but the long-term outlook here for Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville, absolutely love it. Let's move on to the 102 there. That was Zach Wilson, of course, landing to the New York Jets there. Of course, once Sam Darnold was traded, we kind of locked that in. We knew that that was practically, we knew that like Trevor Lawrence was written in blood, essentially, that he was the 101, right? The number one pick in the draft. Written in pen was Zach Wilson. So Zach Wilson in New York, now that you know Elijah Vera Tucker, Michael Carter, the running back out of North Carolina, that these guys, Elijah Moore, they did some intentional work here to surround Zach Wilson with what he needs to be successful. Did he move up your dynasty rookie draft boards? Is he one of those three quarterbacks that you alluded to earlier in the conversation with Trevor Lawrence? What's kind of your heat check here on a temperature check on Zach Wilson?
No, he's not one of the three, but he definitely moved up a spot, solidified him at QB4, and kudos to the Jets doing something for Zach Wilson that they never did for Sam Darnold, which is surrounding him with talent. And it's not just the draft. They brought in Corey Davis. You know, they made these moves to shore up the offensive line in the draft. They were aggressive. So I think if I'm a Jets fan, if I am a Zach Wilson manager, you've got to be excited about what they put around him. I still don't think that taking him number two overall was the right move. I would have preferred Trey Lance and Justin Fields, but that's neither here nor there. It's irrelevant. I think he's a rock solid option in dynasty rookie drafts now, you know, in the top half of the first round.
Yeah, so in a rookie draft that I'm in right now, a Superflex League with a bunch of analyst guys across the industry, I am currently sitting at the 203. I traded my first round pick last year to get Joe Burrow. So Zach Wilson's sitting at the 107 now. He's still available. We saw the top three quarterbacks and then Najee Harris, Kyle Pitts, Jamar Chase all went. And so now I'm actively trying to get up to the 107. And of course, I can say this now because like this podcast is going to be released after the clock expires on this pick. So I'm not spoiling my strategy here or anything, but I'm trying to get up to the 107 to try to get Zach Wilson, because I feel like that at that point, knowing what they have done to surround him with a solid, solid supporting cast, you look at that wide receiver core, man, it's six deep. Like right now, of course, Jamison Crowder probably going to be cut after you draft Elijah Moore where you did, but Keelan Cole there as a wide receiver four, Corey Davis, I mean, Denzel Mims, like it's a really, really solid unit. And then, of course, Mekhi Becton, Elijah Vera Tucker at guard and tackle. I mean, it's just all of it just speaks to the fact that they are doing the right thing and they're supporting him with what he needs to be successful. So at the 107, I feel like that is I'm doing everything I can to try to get up there and make sure that I capitalize on a talented quarterback falling who's now in a great spot. So I think that the 106 is probably his floor. I think that that's probably, I don't think that he should go before the other two quarterbacks that we have yet to talk about here. But I think that 106, 107 is probably his floor and where he should be off the board.
I just took him in a rookie draft at the 107 spot, and those first six picks were identical, and it was a slam dunk no-brainer, Zach Wilson at 107.
Absolutely. I mean, say what you want about if you had him lower, and I had him at QB4 going into the draft, and you know, like, but still, he's a solid, solid quarterback prospect, and sitting at the 107 in a Superflex league, that's tremendous value. And in previous years, if you didn't have a Justin Fields, a Trey Lance, he would be going at the 102, the 103. So make sure that you soak up that value. Okay, so number three overall, man. Oh, this was a huge relief to me, man. I stood on the table and was going against the grain here, saying that this move up from the minute that I saw it come across my phone, that San Francisco had traded up from 12 to 3, I said, Trey Lance to San Francisco, send it. And I stood by that the entire time, even when everyone else was saying it was Mac Jones, everyone in the major media, man, I just stood. And so to see that come through was just a huge weight off my chest. Now let's talk about the landing spot here, because I am absolutely in love with this landing spot for Trey Lance. Talk about your outlook for Lance here in San Francisco, knowing the receiving options he's got, the head coach that he's got, and what's just kind of your outlook here for Superflex Dynasty?
Yeah, man, you stood by it and you were right and you should be happy because you didn't waver. And the fact that you had Trey Lance as your quarterback one, I mean, kudos to you for being on that train, man. And when we get to the wide receivers, you'll have another guy we'll talk about. But Lance, as far as fantasy, top five potential, you know, not this season, but 2 years from now, if we're looking and saying that he's a top five quarterback in Dynasty, you shouldn't be surprised. If you look up in a rookie draft and you see him go 101, I don't think people will be shocked. His rushing upside paired with what he can do with his arm, the weapons, you know, San Francisco, they weren't a bad team. You know, they traded up from 12 to 3. So they're ready to compete. And I think sooner rather than later, the cream will rise and Trey Lance is probably going to get snaps this season. And I think that the sky is the absolute limit for this kid.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because that was going to be my question, was when exactly do you think that we're going to see Trey Lance on the field? And does that impact where you take him in a dynasty rookie draft?
No, I think the good thing is, and I know a lot of fantasy gamers don't like this, but sitting isn't the worst thing. Like the beautiful thing about his landing spot is he doesn't have to play. And I'm pretty sure that if Kyle Shanahan can have it his way, he probably won't play until later in the season. I can't see him as one of those guys that sits all year, but they have no reason to rush him. They can take their time and be patient and make sure he's got a good grasp of the offense and then roll him out there, you know, midway through the season, towards the end of the season. They just have a luxury that they don't have to play him right away. So I don't expect anything from him early on. But midway through the season, you know, three-fourths the way through the season, I think he's going to take over and be the guy.
For sure. I'm in the same boat. All right, Matt. So for people who tuned into the Fantasy Pros YouTube live stream for round one coverage, you know that Justin Fields landing in Chicago was a just tilting moment for me. I, for about five straight minutes there, I was just on tilt because I knew that Chicago had traded up, right? That broke. And then it was the question of if they traded up for Mac Jones with Justin Fields on the clock, I was going to lose my mind. And it comes through that it's Justin Fields. And now, so Justin Fields landing in Chicago. Allen Robinson, congratulations, man. You now have a quarterback for the first time in your career. But talk about Fields and your outlook for him, because he's got Andy Dalton ahead of him on the roster. And Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace have been vocal about, we want him to sit. We want to do the Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes, and every head coach and quarterback, or head coach and general manager, like, say that, right? They want their rookie quarterback to sit. And then by week three or four, we typically see them thrown into the starting lineup. So do you expect to see Fields on the field in year one? If so, when? And then what's kind of your outlook here for Fields in Chicago specifically?
Man, the marketing team in Chicago should have a field day with this,
right?
With this guy. So they should just have a field day with all the things they can do around the last name Fields. But I do think that that's a little bit of just blowing smoke. I mean, Andy Dalton, I don't think that the Bears ever envisioned a world in which Fields was going to slip to 11. You know, I don't think they ever thought that to be a possibility when they signed Andy Dalton to that 1 year deal. But two, like San Francisco, they don't have to rush him out there week one. I think his odds of playing or playing early are greater than Trey Lance. And I do think that by week four, week five, they go ahead and say, we've seen enough of Andy Dalton. Let's go ahead and get Justin Fields out here, and it's going to be his offense at that point. I think it's a, you know, people talk about San Francisco. I think Chicago, with an ascending tight end in Cole Kmet, with a very, very good wide receiver too, and Mooney, with an elite wide receiver in Allen Robinson, with two really good running backs in Tariq Cohen and David Montgomery, I loved the landing spot for Justin Fields. And I was really happy for you because that's awesome to have a quarterback like that to root for. You know, I'm here in Dallas and I've got Dak Prescott and we all love Dak. Right. I said this and I don't say this lightly. When you're talking about Chicago sports lore, I know, you know, the Cubs have a place. I know the White Sox have got great, but I'm just not that well-versed in baseball. I think he's got a chance to be up there with like the Derrick Rose type loves.
100%.
I'm not gonna go MJ, not yet. That's pantheon. But you know, Derrick Rose was like a champion for Chicago. Like I think he's got that ability to be that sort of icon in Chicago. So I love it for Fields, for Dynasty, and for me, he's still my quarterback too over Lance, man.
Yeah, so that was the thing that I was going to ask you was I thought that you had him at QB2. I couldn't remember, but QB2, QB3 for me, those guys were kind of all grouped together. So, I mean, Justin Fields, from a fantasy perspective, man, just within the top three picks in a Superflex league, and if he falls to four and you're sitting there at four, you're doing cartwheels because there's no way that he should still be there by pick number four, five, or six. Like, he has to go off the board early. So, Justin Fields in Chicago, man, I absolutely love it for more than one reason, that's for sure. Before we keep moving with today's episode of the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Football Podcast, I need to tell you all about Reality Sports Online. By now, most of you have probably heard of Reality Sports Online, the powerful fantasy sports platform where owners get to build and manage their fantasy team like an NFL general manager. But the question is, have you tried it? It's time to go see what all the buzz in the Dynasty community is about. Everything from free agency, multi-year contracts, a rookie draft, first-round rookie options, automated contract and salary cap functionality, and so much more can be found at Reality Sports Online. Do you think it sounds complicated, though? It's not. The best thing about Reality Sports Online Fantasy Front Office is that it doesn't take any more time than a standard league. It just requires more strategy. Think you're among the fantasy elite? Well, this is the platform to test your mettle. Still not sure? You can test out your general manager skills for free in a mock free agency auction. If you like what you see, use the promo code FANTASYPROS to receive a 10% discount on your team or league today. Fantasy just got real at realitysportsonline.com. Okay, so Mac Jones falls, right, quote unquote, to number 15 overall to New England. So let's talk about Mac Jones here, and I'm going to kind of give you the floor here on Mac Jones, and then I'll kind of wrap it up. But Mac Jones in New England, your thoughts on the landing spot?
On October 25th, 2020 at 4:28 p.m., I tweeted out Mac Jones is going to look great in a Patriots uniform next year. I tweeted that.
There you go. Take a lap, man.
Mac Jones did not fall, okay? Those of you listening who dabble in the stock market, you all know the saying, price always reverts back to the mean. I said on our show, I never said that Mac Jones was a top three option. He didn't fall. He was drafted right where I believed he should have been drafted the whole time, right in the middle of the first round. And then he goes to New England, which I think is a great situation because New England made Matt Castle a $50 million man. They had Jimmy Garoppolo. They made him a $100 million man. They just do well with this archetype of quarterback, this pocket passer that gets the ball out on time. Tom Brady didn't have the strongest arm. Lord knows Matt Castle didn't have a strong arm. They're football smart. They get the ball out. It's where it needs to be. I think this was a great landing spot for Mac Jones, and I do think that his future in Superflex formats, two QB formats, is very bright. As long as Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick are there, I think this was, you know, I almost think this is an even better landing spot than San Francisco because the pressure's not there on Jones. He falls into an organization and a culture that knows how to develop these quarterbacks. So I love it for Mac Jones.
Absolutely. I think that you talk about San Francisco and New England. They're right neck and neck for me as far as landing spots because you mentioned it, the archetype, the prototype. They have made it work before with this type of quarterback. Now, let's talk about specifically Mac Jones for dynasty purposes and at least like 2021 outlook because Cam Newton and Mac Jones, I don't know if you can find two more polar opposite players, right, at the quarterback position. Like I said on our main podcast, like I cannot wait for the training camp pictures that come out of Cam Newton and Mac Jones standing side by side. It's just going to be so polar opposite. So the offense that they're going to run with Cam Newton, that is going to take some time to adjust. Like that is not something that you just go 1 week in week three and then week four you go, no, we're sitting Cam Newton and Mac Jones is starting in week four. So I think it's got to be something where they ride with Cam Newton until their bye week. And then at that point, you have 2 weeks to fully flip over that offense to completely change the offensive structure and play calling. So do you think, one, that Mac Jones will see the field in year one? And then two, if so, when exactly do you see that kind of play in the same way, the same way that it's got to be a bye week switch here for Mac Jones?
100%. I think he's going to play. I think if they had a viable backup to Cam Newton last year, they would have pulled the plug on that experiment. Jarrett Stidham is just absolutely garbage. So, I mean, they had no choice. And I also don't think they're going to I believe that Kraft, Belichick, and Josh McDaniels are smart enough to understand that they just spent a first-round pick, a top 15 pick on a quarterback. They are not going to develop this entire offense around Cam Newton. I promise you that. I bet you we see a hybrid offense where there are some things that Cam does well, but I bet you they are building this offense around Mac Jones' skill set. Cam Newton, that's not what he does well. And I think by the bye week, if not sooner, we see Mac Jones on the field for New England, who has a very good offensive line. I don't think they're going to build, and he's on a one-year deal. They're not about to build their offense around Cam Newton. Sure thing. They will cater it to some of the things that he does well, but they are building this around Mac Jones and his skill set.
Okay, so we saw a run there of quarterbacks towards the third round and back into the second. Kyle Trask to Tampa Bay, Kellen Mond to Minnesota. That's an interesting one for me. Davis Mills to Houston. I didn't understand this pick then. I don't understand it now. If you are moving forward and signaling that you're moving on from Deshaun Watson, then you wait a year, you roll with Tyrod, and then you take your quarterback early next year. This was a wasted pick. You had needs all over this roster. You should have taken an interior offensive lineman, interior defensive lineman. It made zero sense to me. Davis Mills is not going to be your long-term starting quarterback. And then Ian Book in the fourth round to New Orleans. Goodness gracious, I don't understand that pick. Sam Ellinger in the sixth round to Indy. These are the quarterbacks that were drafted. Any of those five guys, because we got to keep moving and we got to get to running back. Any of those five guys that stand out to you that you say, like, I'm willing to take a shot on this guy in the beginning of the third round, late second of a Superflex Dynasty rookie draft?
Two guys. It's Kyle Trask and Kellen Mond. Trask with the second round draft capital behind Tom Brady. Couldn't have landed in a better spot for him, and he got day two draft capital. And then Kellen Mond, I love the move for Minnesota. It allows him to sit because he, Lord knows, he needs to sit for a year or two. He's one right. That needs to sit. You know, he needs to sit. Yep. Kurt's still got two years left on that deal with that extension. They can't cut him until 2022 because it's a ton of cap hit. But I love Mond and I love Mond's landing spot. I like Kyle Trask's landing spot. I think by like 305, they should both be off of the board.
I'm in the same boat as you there. Mond would be the one that I'd be taking the shot on just because of the little bit of the edge there in mobility. I think that he could find his way to start, which is crazy. I think that Mond could find his way into a starting role sooner than Kyle Trask, which is crazy because Tom Brady's already 47 years old. Anyway, okay, let's move over to running back here. So Najee Harris, of course, the first round draft capital to Pittsburgh. This had kind of been telegraphed from a long way out, saying that we knew that Najee Harris was going to be a Pittsburgh Steeler. Again, do we really need to talk about this one? Like, he's the 101 running back for me. I don't know about you, do we have anything that we need to talk about here in this landing spot?
Stop being worried about their offensive line. He's got Benny Snell, Kalen Ballage, and Anthony McFarland. This dude's
he's
going to
be into the ground.
20 plus touches a game. Stop it. Easy. Volume is what we want. Let's move on. He's the RB1 in the class, period.
Perfect. Travis Etienne, of course, I mentioned it, reuniting with Trevor Lawrence there in Jacksonville. Urban Meyer wanted Kadarius Toney at 25. He came out and said that was the guy that they wanted, and we could talk about that at a different time. But Travis Etienne at 25 overall. Talk about Etienne here briefly, and then mention your thoughts on James Robinson specifically, because this obviously impacts him.
Explosive. We knew that. Reunited with Trevor Lawrence. They want to run the ball. He's a first round pick. He's going to get opportunity. He's not a bell cow. That's as brief as I can make it. I know people are thinking he's not going to get Najee Harris type volume. I don't think he's that type of player. I don't think he's that type of talent. And you want me to go into James Robinson from here?
Yeah, let me just say this really quick, because I think with Etienne, no, I do not think that he is going to get the type of workload that some people on Twitter are saying. It's just not going to happen, especially with a first round draft capital. But I will say that the way that I kind of envision this right now, and I'll have a better idea once I sit down and do projections, is kind of how New Orleans utilized Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara for the longest time, where Ingram had that like 10 to 12 carries per game. He saw a couple of targets here or there. And then Kamara was the one who would see 6 to 8 carries, but then 6 to 8 targets, right? And I think that that's going to be how, maybe even a little bit more, where Robinson's seeing 8 to 10 carries per game, and ETN seeing a little bit more. Maybe that's how I see this split playing out. But so I don't think Robinson is going away, in my opinion. I want to know your opinion, though.
I'm with you 100%. I'm seeing all these Robinson is dead. He's toast. He's worthless now. That's ridiculous. I mean, take your lap. We all knew that Robinson wasn't going to walk into the season as the he was the only back 90%. Opportunity share last year. We knew that wasn't going to happen. They were going to bring somebody in, and we kind of thought it would be Travis Etienne, but we were talking about it in the second round. So he goes a couple of picks earlier. I'm with you 100%. There are very few, Kyle, very few, Derrick Henry, Christian McCaffrey, Ezekiel Elliott's running backs who just command all the work. Najee Harris, I think, is going to be in that category. Other than that, too. J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb, Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams. I know we hated seeing that, but very few running backs just get it all. James Robinson is not going away, and I think you hit the nail on the head. It's going to be a Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara type situation where, you know, Robinson's the early down back. He gets a couple of targets. ETN, third down back, gets more targets, maybe carries the ball a little more than Kamara did. But it's going to be projecting the split. And again, I rely on this. I don't think that ETN has the feet, the vision of James Robinson. I just don't. I said that throughout the entire pre-draft process. That's why Najee was number one for me. I got sick of watching ETN slam into the back of offensive linemen. So we'll see how he adjusts at the NFL level. But the draft capital is going to lend to multiple years of opportunity. But we've seen running backs drafted in the first round that don't pan out, i.e. Sony Michel, Rashad Penny. And I'm not saying that's Travis Etienne. But I'm just saying that if people are panicked and are all the way out on James Robinson and want to get rid of him for dirt cheap, I will happily pay that price.
He still has value, not only just from what the work that he's going to get in this offense, period, but then also as a like insurance running back, like as a depth piece on your dynasty roster. If someone is completely panicking and wants out on James Robinson and is willing to sell him dirt cheap, then acquire him. Because what happens if ETN God forbid again, but like what happens if he goes down with an injury? Well, then James Robinson steps right in because they don't have, it's not Carlos Hyde, you know? So then Robinson gets that workload that he had last year and he gets the receiving workload, which is what made him so valuable. So let's move on. Javonte Williams lands in Denver here after a trade up scenario. Denver trades up in front of Miami, who was reportedly set to take Javonte Williams. So let's talk about Denver here. Williams in this landing spot, I'm personally like, I like it for 2022. In 2021, I think that he'll end up splitting this workload with Melvin Gordon, assuming that Melvin Gordon doesn't have fallout from his DUI that he had last year, right? Like, so I think Williams is kind of going to be like a split workload here this season, but then 2022, I feel like he's about to take off. Do you see that differently?
No, I think you're right on. I think it's going to be more than a split. To the Gordon side, I think you're looking at maybe like 65, 35, you know, something in that range where Gordon is still the primary ball carrier, primary receiving back. We see enough Javonte Williams to where the Broncos feel comfortable with moving forward with him as the guy in 2022. But I don't think we're going to get what we maybe want. Or wanted if Javonte was in New York or Miami from year one. So I like the landing spot, but maybe more so down the road than for 2021.
Did Williams landing in Denver, and knowing the other landing spots that we're about to talk about, did Williams bump out of that top three tier for you, or is he still worth taking as like the RB3 off the board?
Absolutely not. And I'm probably going to crush souls on this next spot because I think after Williams, I'm fine passing on every single running back after Javonte Williams.
Let's talk about it, man, because I think that Trey Sermon landing in San Francisco, for me, it's interesting that in a vacuum, right? Trey Sermon in San Francisco, they trade up for him. They make a concerted effort to bring him into this offense. Like, I like that in a vacuum. Now, when you zoom out to the remainder of the draft and you see that they also added Elijah Mitchell, who, of course, you are the like world's biggest fan of. And I'm right there with you. Like, I think that he can be, especially with his athleticism now in this offense, I think that he can be fantastic. So Trey Sermon is a late first, early second 1QB rookie draft pick for me, just based on the running back position and just based on how Barrett is. I think that he has some value. I do think that they're going to utilize him, especially with the draft capital, the fact that they traded up for him in an offense that is about to go nuclear, right? With Trey Lance and George Kittle, all these receiving options. Like, I think this offense is about to go nuclear. So scoring opportunities certainly could be there for Trey Sermon. I just don't know with Elijah Mitchell, with Jeff Wilson, Raheem Mostert, I think is still there. So it's like, what's the true outlook here for him? I just don't know if with all that in consideration, I don't know if Sermon moved up to like the RB3, RB4 spot for me.
Yeah, he's RB4 for me, and I don't want him. I will gladly let a league mate take him at 111, 112, 201, 202. No, thank you. I want no part in it. How many times last year did we start Raheem Mostert? Did we start Jamichael Hasty only for Jeff Wilson to come in at the goal line and siphon three touchdowns away?
Sure.
They use multiple running backs in Kyle Shanahan's offense, multiple running backs. They gave Jeff Wilson a little bit of an extension. They drafted Elijah Mitchell later on. Like, if Sermon was the guy, why even take Elijah Mitchell? Like, why even do that? I'm not buying it, man. I like Trey Sermon. I think he's a good running back. He's a good running back. He's not a great running back. And if you're my advice to dynasty managers is, I am not drafting just because I need a running back and inferior talent over Rondale Moore, over Rashad Bateman, over Elijah Moore, over a Mac Jones. I'm not doing it, man. Like, I don't think this guy is the long-term answer at running back. In hell, I don't even know if he's going, like, how much work is he going to get? 4 carries a game, 6 carries? Like, I don't want any part of that rotation. No thank you on Trey Sermon. I will draft him and trade him to somebody who thinks that he's about to walk into 20 touches a game. I will gladly do that, but I have no interest, man.
Sure thing. The last running back that I want to go in depth here on is Michael Carter. Of course, out of North Carolina, he lands in New York. Now, there is a path to volume here for this running back, because you're looking at this depth chart. It's LaMichael Perine, Tevin Coleman, and Michael Carter now. And he gets a little bit lower draft capital than I thought he would have. I thought he would have gone in the third round, maybe even over Trey Sermon. But he goes in the fourth round there to the New York Jets, in an offense that I think is a perfect fit for his skill set as an outside zone team, utilizing his burst and agility. So I'm kind of all in on Michael Carter here in New York. I really like this landing spot. Now, he was RB5 for me going into the draft. He is now RB4 for me. I've got Trey Sermon at RB5. So I think that this landing spot, now again, I'm not going crazy here. I'm not taking him over some of the other guys that you talked about. I am taking him over Trey Sermon, though, so he's in that late first, early second consideration for me. But it sounds like you have a different opinion here.
There is no way on earth I would take Michael Carter in the first round. I don't care if it was a 14 team. Just think about this, like, I really believe that we are elevating these inferior running back talents, man, because of the lack of depth at the position. And for me, I'd rather just pass on it, man. Like, he's not a better player than some of these wide receivers that are going early second round. When you're talking about Moore and Bateman and Marshall and the other Moore, like, I can't do it. What is Michael Carter's, what's his highest outlook that you can see him being? Like an RB2, maybe? He's 5'8", 200 pounds, man. He's 5'8", 200. And I get it. Like, and that's why Kenneth Gainwell, I believe, fell. That's what's like, I just don't see like RB1, high-end RB2 consistency. If he is that, I will come on this show and say I was wrong. I apologize, but I am not doing it, man. I'm not doing it, especially when you look ahead to 2022 And I'd take the first four or five running backs in 2022 over Trey Sermon, Michael Carter, and company. Like, I'm not going to do it, man.
Okay, so here's the thing. I agree with you as far as the talent situation and Michael Carter in a vacuum with Rashad Bateman, with some of these other, Amon-Ra St. Brown landing in Detroit. Like, there are some great situations here for wide receivers. Would I rather have that wide receiver? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, like, we've got to fill the running back spot on our roster, on our dynasty roster, right? So, and there are some teams out there that were heading into a rebuild this year, or they have needs at the RB3, RB4 spot, and they've got, like, Samaje Perine sitting as their, like, bench running back that they might have to start. So, like, at some point, you have to fill the spot on your roster at the running back position. I'm just saying, with this spot, at the back end of the first round, early second, I'm willing to spend that draft capital on Michael Carter because I think that he can be relevant. Do I think that he has the same ceiling as a Javonte Williams, Travis Etienne, Najee Harris? No, I don't. But I think that he can be fantasy relevant to the point where I'm not going to look back, I think, and regret that pick at the end of the first, early second if I had a need at the running back position. That's where I'm coming from. In a vacuum, would I need or would I rather prefer like these other wide receivers? Yes, absolutely. But the running back position is scarce in Dynasty, man. Like, there are some spots, and you mentioned it, it's because there are so many teams that are utilizing committees. There are players that you're heading into the next season with that you're just not confident in, that you're not having a good feeling on. So you've got to at least look at some of these running backs that landed in good spots and say, like, I'll take the shot on them.
Yeah, you make a compelling case. You do. And I think this is the beauty of Dynasty. For me, I think that you would regret that. If you took Michael Carter at the 112 over potentially players that are going around there in that ADP, right? We're talking Jalen Waddle. We're talking Rashad Bateman, Rondell Moore. You will regret that 2 years down the line. For me, I would rather trade out of that pick, let somebody else take Michael Carter, take the wide receiver, and take a shot later on Ramondre Stevenson in the fourth, Chris Evans, who probably projects to be the backup to Joe Mixon. Like, I don't see Michael Carter being relevant long enough to warrant taking him over somebody who's walking into a wide receiver one, wide receiver two type chair. That's the beauty of Dynasty. For me, I think you would regret that very, very quickly in the NFL season. And sometimes it's okay to have a gap at a roster spot in Dynasty and fill with talent in other areas and address those needs later on.
Well, I'll say this too. What you mentioned, there was one thing in there that you said, like, if you can trade that pick for a proven veteran, yes, do that. Like, I'm fine doing that at the end of the first round, because especially if you have a need at the running back position and someone is over the moon about Michael Carter or Trey Sermon, then yeah, I'm selling that pick because I think that Michael Carter is going to be like a low end RB2, high end RB3. Like, I feel like that's kind of his spot, but and that, again, has its worth. It has its value in Dynasty especially. But if I can trade that for a proven veteran, if I can get a David Montgomery, if I can get David Montgomery for a low-end RB1 or low-end first-round pick where the spot that I would have taken Michael Carter or Trey Sermon, I feel like I'm going to make that move 10 times out of 10. Let's move on because we got to get through at least the after that. It was, first off, I don't even know how you say this dude's name. I didn't even scout him. Keen Nwangwu out of Iowa State. Yeah, I didn't even scout him, man.
Let somebody else take him. I saw him. Let somebody else take him.
He's filling that like Amir Abdullah role. He's the RB3 on this roster. He's not seeing. That was a crazy pick for me. That was really early for him. Ramondre Stevenson in New England. Do you have any? I'm just going to fly through the rest of this list, right? And you just say, like, if you have any interest in them, let's just get your kind of brief thoughts here. So
mild.
Okay.
Mild.
I actually might be out on Ramondre Stevenson, so now we switched where you were out pre-draft, and now that I know that he's in New England, I'm out, and you're kind of mildly interested. Okay, Chuba Hubbard in Carolina. Any interest?
Yes.
I am kind of interested, too. As the backup there, I don't think that he's going to get a ton of work, but I do think that he got the draft capital, and I think at least relative draft capital, and I think that he can be relevant, especially if something happens to CMC again. Kenneth Gainwell, man, what a fall. Kenneth Gainwell in Philadelphia, any interest?
Sad to say, not right now.
I will say mild, because I think that Nick Sirianni is going to try to institute what Frank Reich did in Indy last year, where you're going to see Miles Sanders kind of as that Jonathan Taylor, Boston Scott maybe involved as that, like, you know, Jordan Wilkins role, maybe then Kenneth Gainwell fills the Nyheim Hines role, and you're going to see them all kind of involved. All right, Elijah Mitchell in San Francisco. Obviously, you were big on Elijah Mitchell. We mentioned him a little bit ago, but any interest there?
Uphill battle right now, very mild.
I think he's worth taking with a late third, early fourth round pick, you know, just to see, get him in a training camp, see what he looks like. If he makes the roster, then I think you've got a shot of him being fantasy relevant with how much they cycle through those running backs. But I'm not taking him anywhere before then. I'm not talking about Gary Brightwell. Chris Evans, I mean, he's the backup there in Cincinnati. Any interest there?
Yeah, absolutely. Backup in Cincinnati, Joe Mixon. I love him, but he hasn't been the model of health. So, and I think he's going to have a passing down role as well. I know they're talking about keeping Joe on the field all three downs. Would love it, but I think he is going to be the backup in Cincy, and I want a piece of that offense.
How early would you take Chris Evans in a 1QB dynasty rookie draft?
Third round. He's going to be in the third or fourth round for me.
Okay. Larry Rountree in Los Angeles. I was kind of in on Larry Rountree heading into the draft. This is a sneaky good landing spot where Joshua Kelly did nothing last year to prove that he should be the main guy in this offense. Justin Jackson has shown flashes, but he can't stay healthy. There's a path for Larry Rountree to be a starting running back alongside Austin Eckler in this offense led by Justin Herbert. So I'm kind of interested with Larry Rountree, even though he was a sixth round pick. It's an uphill battle, but if I'm in the back end of the third round, I'm on the clock. I might be taking Larry Rountree over some of these other guys.
Like the call.
Khalil Herbert in Chicago, no thank you. Jake Funk in Los Angeles, the Rams, no thank you. Jared Doakes in Miami. I didn't get around to scouting Doakes. Did you see anything, if you scouted him, that makes you think that he could beat out Miles Gaskin or Savon Ahmed?
The answer to that is unequivocally no. And I know he's a hot, he's been floating around on the timeline today, but no, no.
Okay. And then finally here, Kylin Hill, man, sixth or seventh round draft capital. I can't remember off the top of my head, to Green Bay. So this was a significant fall for him. I thought he would have gone in like the fourth round, fifth round. But man, Kylin Hill in Green Bay could potentially fill that Jamal Williams role. I think he's got a shot, but the limited draft capital here makes me a little bit nervous.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really in on Kylin during the scouting process and going. I think he was the seventh. I think it was close to Mr. Irrelevant.
I think it was pretty close, yeah.
Nope, no thank you.
And then Jamar Jefferson in Detroit.
Nope.
Nope. I was kind of out on Jamar Jefferson after the pro day. His pro day needed to like validate some of the things on tape. Didn't. I was kind of out. And knowing that he went as late as he did and to Detroit, no thank you. I'm out. All right, that is all the quarterbacks, all the running backs from the 2021 NFL Draft. Huge thank you to Reality Sports Online for sponsoring today's podcast. Ray, this was a ton of fun, man. I mean, being able to talk through the quarterback landing spots, we spent a ton of time on those guys, which I think we needed to with Superflex leagues being as important as they are. Running back, we kind of flew through those. You mentioned, and I want to give you props here because you mentioned early on in this process, you said it's a bad class. And I went into it kind of being like, we kind of say that every year, but there's always kind of guys that I like that are sleepers. And there really was just a lack of depth here in this class. And the NFL proved that to us, where these guys, I mean, very, very little and few fantasy relevant spots outside of the top three. So I wanted to give you props here, man, for just calling that out from the beginning. Appreciate your work, man, and how hard you work leading up to the NFL draft.
Yeah, thanks, man, and props to you, and I mean this sincerely, and I've caped for you before, standing on that hill by yourself with Trey Lance's QB1, and I don't know if you said it, but is he still your QB1?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Yeah. Good calls, man. It was fun talking to you about this, and I'm looking forward to the wide receiver and tight end talk coming
Absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely. We'll be back later on this week with that discussion on the wide receivers and tight ends. Until next time, for Ray Garvin, I'm Kyle Yates, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.